Hi, this is Corey Olson, the Tolkien Professor, and welcome to another Tolkien Chat. Today, I have for you a conversation with Bernd Greisinger, the owner and director of the Greisinger Museum. Bernd lives in Switzerland, and he's a Tolkien collector. He collects books, art, movie collectibles. He's got the biggest total collection of Tolkien stuff in the entire world. And now, instead of sitting on his hoard like Smaug with the gathered wealth of the region of Erebor for his bed, instead he decided to showcase his collection and make it open to the public. But not only did he do that, he also decided to make the museum in which he showcases his collection into an immersive Middle-earth experience where each room of the museum recreates a setting from Tolkien's works. He's got Bag End, Minas Tirith, Moria, a bunch of different places. The museum just celebrated its grand opening in the last few weeks here in September of 2013. I was fascinated when I heard about the museum, so I got in touch with Mr. Greisinger to learn more about his project. What follows here in this episode is two things. First, a recording of my chat with Bernd, and second, a few reflections of my own that were kind of inspired by thinking about the museum and about our conversation, thinking about Tolkien and landscape and fantasy and escape and stuff like that. So I give you now my conversation with Bernd Greisinger.
Hello, Bernd. Hi, this is Corey Olson.
Corey Olson, that's nice. Yeah, nice to meet you.
Good to meet you. I'm glad we got a chance to connect here. I'm excited to talk about the museum and your collection, and I'm sure that my listeners will be really glad to hear about it.
I hope so.
How's everything going, by the way, in preparation for the opening?
Yeah, I have much work because in 3 weeks we will have the opening ceremony event, and then all must be finished. So every day I have much work at the moment.
Yes, I can imagine. Oh, that's very exciting. I really wish I could come. I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to make it there.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not nice. It would be nice to have you here.
Yes, it would be. I am certainly hoping I can make it over there before too long. I know my family would love to come, so we'll have to see what we can do. I was thinking, as I mentioned on my email, I was thinking, first of asking some questions about the collection and the museum and everything so that they can find out more about that.
Okay, so let me first find your email.
Oh, sure.
So, first question of the collection is, what do you have in the collection?
Yes. I was wondering, if I think people would like to hear what kind. Because my understanding is that this project really began with your private collection, right?
It is my private collection and will be my private collection, because the museum will be a foundation, but the foundation will show my collection.
Right.
So that will be the construction at the moment. And, yes, so, but it, at the end, it doesn't matter because it's all mine. It's my real estate. I have built the museum. I will be the museum director. So it is all in one hand.
Yeah. So, well, that's great. Well, tell me a little bit more about the collection, about how this started. So you've been collecting, things for a long time, right?
What is long? I collect now 8 years.
Wow, that's great. That's great. So what kinds of things have you been collecting?
Yes, we have three parts. One is literature, of course, because all started with the books of Tolkien. So we have thousands of books from Tolkien or about Tolkien, and also translated editions and versions, variations, and very special books, unicates, signed books of Tolkien, and so on. So a big literature part, and it will be the biggest collection in the world about books of Tolkien.
Wow.
So at the moment we have more than 3,000, but I think we will go over 5,000 when we have finish, you cannot say, because around the world always we have new editions, new impressions. So collecting goes always on. Is not just not a process that stops.
Absolutely.
So this is a very important part of our museum. Is a big archive. Is many important books. Then the second is the artworks of the people of the artists who were inspired by Tolkien's books and his created world, Middle Earth. And you know surely about 50 or more artists who produced artwork in the last 30, 40 years. One of the first was Cor Bloch, Pauline Baynes, Tim Kirk, and these in the 60s, 70s as they started. So and in the 1890s, then there came many new artists. And artists we know today with Ted Nasmyth, with Alan Lee or John Howe and Roger Garland and these guys, yes. Sure. So I think the biggest collection in artwork is about 600 originals from about 100 different artists. So this is a very, a big collection and very expensive too. So this is the artwork, and artwork that means painting, drawing, sketch, and all this in this part. And the third part is then collectibles, merchandise, all you can collect. People all around in the world that is anything connected with Tolkien or Middle Earth. If you go in internet, you can see what you can buy. That is not literature, not artwork, but other stuff. And there we have thousands, I don't know, different merchandise pieces that you can collect. So it's very huge, the collection. And at the end, it is the biggest collection in the world.
Your collection sounds really exciting. And so tell me, when did you have the idea to sort of take the collection and turn it into a museum? Was that your thought from the beginning, or was that something that came later?
At the beginning, I was starting collecting some items. And so in 2005, I started to collect many things. I had many boxes in the head of my house under the roof. And when I had 100 boxes full with pieces, I decided that when I will build a house, I will need two rooms to show or to exhibit my collection. This was the first idea. But then when I had 400 boxes full with stuff, then I thought that two rooms will be not enough. And so I have to make a museum, yes. So the problem was the mass of collectibles that I had. And when I bought more paintings, and paintings are very big, then it was obviously needed to have many walls to show the paintings. So I need, two rooms would be not enough. It must be a museum, yes.
So now you were saying that, you know, you wanted more rooms in order to be able to display the collection, which is great. But, you know, from the look of things, you have done a great deal more than just put a bunch of big empty rooms to put the collection in. You have themed the different rooms around different areas, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yes, of course. Because we have so many pieces, it was, if you make a museum, you need to create different rooms for different places, because it makes no sense to have three rooms of Minas Tirith or three rooms of Moria. So you have to give a widespread view of the whole story. And so that was the decision for us to start as all adventures of Lord of the Ring and Hobbit in Bergend. So right. We built the Hobbit Hole with three rooms, kitchen and shower, bathroom, with toilet. So you can live inside our Hobbit Hole. And this is the beginning of the museum. So the people enter inside the nice, good living hole and feel comfort and want to stay there. But after perhaps 15 or 20 minutes, they have to start the adventure. And then they leave this nice Hobbit Hall and they go, to the museum underground. And then they have the different places of Middle Earth with their creatures, with beasts or evil guys, whatever they find there, like Nazguls, Balrog, or Troll, Orcs, Uruk-hai, all that we know. So that is the idea of the museum.
So you're not only then just displaying the materials, but really trying to give visitors to the museum, you know, a sense of really entering into these places and being really immersed in all of this stuff, right?
Of course, every room that we have is in Middle Earth style. So there is no room that is like modern style today building. No, it is all in the style of Middle Earth. So if you enter the museum, you change the world. You will be in Middle Earth, and if you leave the museum, then you're back in the daytime. So in the daylife, but the museum is totally style in Middle Earth.
That sounds really wonderful. Tell us, what's your vision for the museum? Will it be open to the public?
Yes, it is open to the public. The public can come, but not when the public wants. So that means we have no opening time. So you cannot think I go to Janin's and then at 9 or 10 on Monday I will have a look inside. It's not possible. Everyone who wants to visit the museum has to book on our website the day and the time when he wants to come and buy the ticket. Because we have only guided tours. You cannot enter the museum on your own and go through without any guide. So, but we have the guide tour in 4 different languages. And so I think we can, that many people can understand us and we can have a good talk with them about Tolkien Middle Earth. Yes, what's all that? Yeah, the people have to book. They can start from 1st October on. And the booking system will be installed on our website end of August.
Oh, that's great. I know that a lot of people who are coming to Europe and visiting Europe, I think it's going to be, I'm sure, a major destination for Tolkien fans in Europe for years to come. It sounds really exciting.
Yeah. I think our target is not only for Europe, but also for the whole world to make it to a center. Because I don't know, at the moment we have no other museum worldwide in this situation like we have it here. We have in New Zealand where the movies were situated with the landscapes. So this is a part, of course. We have in England the original places where Tolkien lived and were inspired by his homeland. And but in America, I think we have nothing like this that we can say in America we have a center of Middle Earth at the moment, or?
Right. No, not that I know of. Certainly, I think it's a great opportunity, and I think that especially as you were saying about being in Bag End in particular, I know is an experience that a lot of people would be really excited about. I mean, getting to experience many of the other places, I think, is also really great. But I've been particularly drawn to the pictures of Bag End that you have posted on your website. It certainly does look very inviting, very welcoming. And I think that, the idea of being able to go and really sort of feel yourself surrounded by that environment, I think is going to be something that would be a really special experience for Tolkien fans. I think it's really great.
Yeah, I think this too. And when you mentioned in New Zealand, you know the inner parts, they were all done in the studios. So they have the Mata Mata, they have the countryside of the Shire.
Right.
But the filmmaking of the inside situations was in the studio. So it is not, you can not go to Mata Mata, to the Shire, and go inside the Bag End and live there or be there. This is only it's like a fake. You have only
right.
The outside frames, the window, you have the doors, but that's it.
Yeah, it's very different, and of course, seeing the films, you get the sense of, you're given the illusion of being present there in the building. But of course, that's the thing about movie sets, right? They're only ever two-dimensional. I mean, they're always kind of faces designed to show the camera something, but they don't have you know, they don't have all the back end to them. So yeah, to be able to be in a more fully immersive environment like that, I think would be, you know, it would be a novelty to be able to see the film set of Bag
yep.
End, but it would
yep.
be a very different kind of experience to be able to actually sort of sit back in front of the fire with the kettle just beginning to sing, in Bag
mm-hmm.
End. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and the people who were here the last years, they when they come to the Hobbit Hall and enter it in or out, and then go to the fireplace, or they don't want to leave. They like it. They want to stay because it's so incredible. It's so beautiful. This is perfect. I want to live here.
Absolutely.
You know Peter Kenny from Australia?
I do, yes.
Yes. And Peter was last year also here, and he is the Hobbit from Australia. And he told me, Bernd, I want to live here. I want to live in your Hobbit Hall. It is my Hobbit Hall. I want to live here. So, and
didn't
I think,
see a picture of Peter on your website in Bag End?
Yeah, that was
yes.
what I made for him as a big fan of Tolkien and Middle Earth, that he is represented on our website because he had much fun here last year.
Oh yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, wonderful. Well, you know, tell me, as you're, you know, obviously from you know the way that you have chosen to do this, because you know. Many people might have just chosen to use, you know, regular modern style rooms, as you say, to display, you know, artwork or collectibles. But, you know, instead of doing that, you chose to create this museum, which had this really immersive effect. So it seems that, you know, these places, you know, the atmospheres of these locations in Tolkien's stories, are something that clearly mean a lot to you, as you have invested so much in recreating those and being able to help other people sort of have that experience. What's your favorite location in Tolkien's world? Which, is there a part of Tolkien's world that you are especially attached to?
Wow, this is a good question. Many people ask me always, what is your favorite book? What is your favorite collectible? What is your favorite artwork? And what is your favorite room? So at the end, for me, is my favorite is altogether, because I love Middle Earth like it is, with these many different places and locations and pieces that you can collect. So for me, I have nothing special, nothing I love most. What I love is my whole collection, my whole museum. It is all together that
right,
makes
right.
me so lucky and I'm proud of, and not a single piece. Yeah, I could give away a single piece of my collection or what else, but at the end, I would be the same proud as before, because the whole collection is not needed, that one important piece is inside or outside the collection. It is all that what I created in a whole, in all of this. This is that what makes me happy.
Absolutely. That's very cool.
So we made every room by heart as the room should be the best from our view, from our look, and we try to give every room the best finish. So every room was it worth to put our heart inside the creation.
Absolutely. So what did you end up choosing? You have a Mines of Moria room, right?
Yes, we have Mines of Moria. We have Wilderland. It's different facets of the elves, of the Anduin River, of Rohan that is in the southwest of Wilderland, and we have the White City of Minas Tirith, and we have Fangorn, of course, the Old Forest, and we have the room for Smaug, because he's very important for the Hobbit. We have especially a room only for Smaug, that is our multimedia cinema room. Then we have little rooms, and like one room for Mordor, a dark red room with all the evil inside. So, and of course, the interesting Hobbit Hall, yeah, for the hobbits. And we will have in 2 weeks a very nice party room for in Middle Earth style, that we can have big parties in with a nice Middle Earth table, round table with 1.80 meters diameter, a 1 meter large gold ring over it, and with a fireplace, with a nice old looking bench or a bar, is it a bar? Where you can have a drink, and with a flipper of stern, with dartboard and the dance floor. So a very nice party room.
Wow. Wow. Do you see yourself hosting events at the museum? Is sort of a larger gathering something that you'd like to see happen at the museum?
Yes. Likely now we have the opening ceremony event. We will have more than 100 guests. And for the future in... per year, we want to have two big events, one in the spring, so in May, and the other one in September. So with events, then we can invite artists, authors, and actors, or other important people, so that the people can book their places for the big event with this museum, with all this and interesting people, and that will be nice meetings here, of course.
Oh, that's fantastic. Wow, very neat. Well, you know, this is a remarkable undertaking that you have done. I know it's been something that you have invested much of yourself in. I mean, I've been very interested to see the pictures that you've posted on your Facebook site, not only of the finished product, but of all of the work that's gone into the project. I know this is something you've been working on for a long time, and it is really exciting to see this really coming together and coming towards opening. You must be just delighted about that.
Yeah. Again, I don't know what to say. It is a big story. 5 years of my life I invested in this dream, because it is a big dream to make such a very beautiful project with many nice guys around me who helped me, to support me, because this project you cannot make alone. So you need other friends who are always also a little bit crazy about of Middle Earth, and help you and support you. And it was a very big experience the last 5 years. And now we come to an end of the realization, and then we will have now, I hope, many years that we can enjoy it, our power that we put into the project. And I hope we will have now really a good harvest of that, what we have done.
Oh, that is wonderful. Well, I definitely recommend to, you know, any of my listeners who, you know, are over in Europe to visit your website and to see if they can book a tour, because this really sounds like a spectacular opportunity. Thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
Yeah, it was a nice pleasure for me too.
Okay, very good. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Corey.
Okay, if you'd like more information about the Greisinger Museum, you should look at his website, www.gmec.ch, or look him up on Facebook. He also has a lot of pictures and videos up on Facebook. Well, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, you know, this conversation really kind of got me thinking. I was thinking in particular about the relationship between the familiar and the fantastic. Yeah, and one of the things, of course, that people always talk about with fantasy is they think about fantasy as escapist literature. And of course, normally when they talk that way, they mean it as an insult. And of course, those of you who know Tolkien's essay on fairy stories know that he really, you know, addressed this subject and engaged with it. And I talked about it quite a bit way back in the first podcast episode I ever posted, my How to Read Tolkien and Why episode. One of the things that I think is certainly clear is that Tolkien's works, especially The Lord of the Rings, function really well as escape. It is a fantasy world in which people do immerse themselves imaginatively and often long to immerse themselves in fact. But what really kind of strikes me, you know, thinking about the accusations that people make about escapism and the discomfort that many people have with that idea, and the way in which, you know, these desires on the part of Tolkien fans seem almost to justify them, or at least to give fuel to those to the people who are uneasy with this kind of escapism. But something that really struck me as I was thinking about this is that One of the other things that people always talk about, that critics of Tolkien often cite when they read the books, which is, of course, not always, but when they do, one of the things that critics of Tolkien's complain about a lot is that Tolkien's writing is so full of landscape description. You know, you've got these long, long descriptions of the countryside that people are traveling through, which a lot of people find simply boring. Now, you know, I'm not going to comment on, I don't myself find it boring, and I think it is really important and has a really important function. But what I really want to point out about it today is that the landscape itself that Tolkien describes is rarely fantastic in itself. That is to say, the countryside that he spends so long describing, such a large percentage of the entire narrative time of The Lord of the Rings, is perfectly normal, mundane landscape. The kinds of plants and animals that you would see, you know, sort of walking in the English countryside. You know, that is to say, there, you know, there are some fantasy worlds in which the very plants and animals that you meet are strange and alien and different. That's not the case in Tolkien. There are, of course, things out there which are different. You know, you might be walking through a perfectly normal looking countryside and find, you know, the ruins of an ancient city, or you might find, some kind, you know, like the eagles or the wargs, as Bilbo found in the wild, but you won't find that the land itself is fundamentally different from our land, from our world. I think, for instance, of Ithilien. I was just teaching my Two Towers class in the Mythgard Academy and was really struck by this again in the very long descriptions of the plant life of Ithilien. And again, these are all plants that you could find in a perfectly normal landscape. But it's within this frame, this non-fantastical frame, that we encounter the fantasy elements. We are walked through the Shire by Tolkien, the Shire which looks exactly like the normal English countryside, but in that countryside are living hobbits, right? We go through, you know, some fairly impressive but otherwise relatively normal mountains and rivers and countryside, and get to Minas Tirith with its grand mythic history, and its long story of decline. You know, you might come across, if you're fortunate, the hidden land of Lorien, you know, where an even more ancient peace and beauty still live, and where you cross the threshold of a magical world which is in many ways quite different from our own, but again set within the middle of a world, of a land, which is very much like ours. Now, I think that this juxtaposition between the mundane surroundings and these fantasy locations and you know, these little sort of pockets of fairy that you go into in Tolkien, and I think that this element is very little appreciated by the critics of fantasy. Again, when people think about fantasy as pure escapism, as avoiding the real world, they're missing this relationship, the way in which Tolkien's work especially really insists on relating the fantasy elements to our world. I think of the language that Tolkien used in On Fairy Stories, where he said that basically when people are complaining about escapism, it is as if they are accusing people of being deserters. You know, he says they are mistaking the flight of the fugitive for the escape of the prisoner. It's not running away from reality. It is encountering within the context of a reality very much like ours these other things, you know, and it's in this way tied to refreshment and recovery. Again, another idea he talks about in On Fairy Stories, that is a way to induce us to look at the world around us in a new way. In short, Tolkien's landscape, his fantasy landscape, squarely engages our world. We never really leave that frame. And through this, Tolkien invites, almost insists upon applicability of the fantasy story that he's telling back to our own world. To immerse ourselves in Tolkien and his secondary world is not to avoid the real world, but to be better equipped to engage it. Well, anyway, I look forward to seeing the Greisinger Museum someday. I love the idea. It strikes me as very much in the spirit of Tolkien, that kind of fantasy landscape set in the middle of our world to which we can escape and return refreshed. If you make it to Switzerland, I encourage you to look it up. It would be wonderful to visit. My thanks to Bernd Greisinger for the interview, and to my listeners, as always, thanks for listening, and Godspeed.